Good afternoon, good evening, good metal. My name's Coop and welcome to the Spoken Metal Show. This episode, we get into it with Mike Roach from Mud Show. They've got a new album coming out, which should be out right now as you hear this podcast or when you hear this podcast, and a show at the end of this weekend as well, which is something a little bit slightly different. It is a metal show with also wrestling as well. And that's the kind of the one of the themes that runs through them as well. It's almost a concept album. When we get into that and talk about that, it's about extreme wrestling, deathmatch wrestling, but also with some of the heaviest music I've heard for some time. The new album, Destiny, is super, super heavy. I immediately wanted to talk to Mike after listening to the album and the concept behind it and the thought behind it. And he was an absolute sweetheart to talk to, really open about his journey. And I think it's a really interesting journey, really interesting story. And this album, I cannot talk about enough. I think it's probably already going to make it into many people's top albums of this year already. It's that good. It's really, really strong. It's Mud Show's Destiny. And we get into it. And it's I thought it was a really, really, really good conversation. So hopefully you will enjoy that. Little bit of business first. You can support the Spoken Metal Show by purchasing a T-shirt. Our links are all over my social medias. And when you buy a T-shirt and you see me in the wild, hopefully at a show, I'll give you a number and individually number that T-shirt. So you'll have that forever and your number forever. Numbers are going pretty high now, so if you want specific numbers, you need to get your orders in as soon as you can and come to a show and actually talk to me and be in a show, and I will give you that individual number. I've got some great shows coming up soon as well. I've just finished recording one with another person across the globe, and I'm really looking forward to that. I'll put more details of that as we get closer to the time. That'll be a little bit after this one comes out. There's been so much going on within the world of metal on Merseyside and the Spoken Metal Show. There's a lot of great stuff coming up, and I've got a really good guest coming up a little bit shortly after the next one. So I always used to worry about, would I have enough people to talk metal to and about and with, and I never thought that it would be like this. I am inundated. Thank you very much for all the suggestions of artists and people you think should come on the show and bands I should check out. It's absolutely wonderful, and I am... The list is endless, and I'm happy to completely add people to that list. I'm working my way through. I mean, I suppose I could do a show every week at the moment. Is that overkill? Is that something you would like? I don't know. Get in touch with me, and we'll see what gets going on. Also, I've been doing on Instagram, I've been raising questions that I think are interesting. I'm listening to the responses, and it helps me kind of see which direction I go with the show as well. And they've been really well received. Like, I've asked if politics belongs in metal. I've asked about details about with promoters and how you should run shows and expectations about how you listen to music and how you absorb music and all these things. And I'm getting some interesting answers, and it's been helping shape kind of how I do the show and kind of what I think you want to hear. Well, absolutely, you will want to hear this show now. This is me speaking with Mike Roach from Mud Show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's really nice to have someone all the way from Memphis. It's Mike from Mud Show. How are we doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing okay. We got there in the end. I should be grateful that we can call across the globe with each other. And if there's any kind of little problems, we shouldn't really be that bothered, should we? At least we can talk, you know?
Yeah, no, we're good. This has been a lot harder just a short time ago.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. There we go. I'll make sure that's all good to go. Well, there's a lot to talk about, Mike. We've got the new album coming up. We've got a show to talk about at the end of this week. There's so much to go through, so much to unpack. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're not a fan of extreme music, then this podcast isn't for you. If you're not a fan of extreme violence and wrestling, deathmatch wrestling, this is, again, not going to be the show for you, because we're going to go all the way in with that. But when I like to begin sometimes, Mike, it's just the first time you hear music and the first music you hear. What's that for you?
I guess the first celebrity of any kind that I could recognize by seeing them when I was real small was B.B. King and Aretha Franklin, when they would pop up on like Sesame Street and things like yes. that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, yeah, they do music. I like music. And then, but the real obsession started, I guess, when the rapper Project Pat released the song Chickenhead in 01, which is not, you know, proper listening for a 9-year-old, but we weren't well supervised back then. So it started with like Project Pat and 3-6 Mafia and Limp Bizkit. Angry urban music and new metal, things like that seemed to resonate with people at the time. That's where it all started, and it got progressively worse the further I dug under the surface and started discovering more heavy bands and more weird, obscure bands that all branch off from that. But yeah, ultimately it's Project Pat to blame for all this.
Was there a particular band when you started digging deep for the heavy bands and the extreme side that you really gravitated to from an extreme point of view?
I think that started with Nirvana and then sort of splintered off into an obsession with the Melvins.
Okay.
And then from there it was anything I could get my hands on, like Boris, bands like Isis and faster, more chaotic things. I love Converge. Worship Converge. Even though Mud Show sounds nothing like that.
Yeah.
Like, but we play Sludge because mathcore is too hard. There's fucking math.
I love it. But it's interesting you mentioned like the Melvins, because they were, when Nirvana broke and there was a whole grunge movement, you had bands like the Dwarves and the Melvins were kind of around that, creating really dissonant music, really like extreme from a different point of view, like dissonance and messing with that. That they came through and people kind of didn't really kind of see that side of the Seattle scene and what was coming out of there. And it was interesting you mentioned the Melvins as being, you know, for me, I'm a huge fan of the Melvins because of that dissonance. And it felt like I shouldn't almost be listening to it. You know, it felt difficult and painful. And that was good for me, you know.
Love it.
Yeah. When did you start going to see bands then? When did that happen?
Very early. I think I was 10, nearly 11 when I went to my first show.
Yeah. What was the first show, Mark?
The first show was Trust Company. Remember that song Downfall? Yeah, those guys. Told you, new metal. It gets dark.
That must have took your fucking head off. They were 10.
They were actually very, very good live. Yeah, like caught them just as the song was probably at its peak of popularity in a small nightclub in Memphis, and they just fucking ripped, bro. They were very good.
Yeah. Did you get to, was it like an older brother or a friend take you to that show?
It was my parents.
Yes. I love it.
We all liked the song. It had been on the radio. And it was like, oh, they're going to be in Memphis. And it's like $5. Let's go.
Perfect.
And then from there on, I refused to ever lead any kind of normal life. I just want to do this.
Yes. So, I mean, when did you start getting into a band then? When did that happen?
First little garage bands, I was 14, 15 maybe. I didn't actually start playing shows on any real level until I was 17, I think. And since then, it's been off and on up until now, where I'm the most active I've ever been.
It's kind of weird.
I'm 32 now, so I've been at it for 15 long years, if I can take a minute to age myself right quick.
But it's weird, isn't it? In the States, ladies and gentlemen, there's obviously this age issue that is higher than in the UK to actually get in a bar and play in a bar. So even though you create music and you're like 14 and 15, you can't actually get into a place, can you, to play, even if you're the band? And they still don't allow you in, do they?
It depends. I was playing in bars when I was 17, 18, back when they weren't supposed to let you in under the age of 21.
Yeah.
But they put the little X with the marker on the yeah. back of your hand so they know not to serve you alcohol, and it's usually it usually just works out that way. It's usually fine.
So I suppose, you know, the obvious next question is, when does wrestling come into your life?
Before music, very early.
Okay.
Like, the first wrestling show I ever saw was like a month after I turned 4. And that is one of my very earliest memories that sticks out like that so well that I could remember it like it was yesterday.
What was the show?
It was Survivor Series 1995, WWF.
Yeah.
Main event was Bret Hart versus Diesel. And in the match, Bret Hart uses like one of the camera cables to almost hog tie Diesel, like tie his legs.
Yeah.
And Bret Hart's way of going about things was logical even to a 4-year-old and made it make sense.
Yeah.
And so I became simultaneously obsessed with Bret the Hitman Hart and dinosaurs. At the same time. To the point that I'm distracted in my kindergarten class wondering who would win in a fight, Bret Hart or a dinosaur.
It is the age-old question, Mike.
It is the age-old question. Feel a new T-shirt idea coming on, but we'll get to that.
That is. There's an album in there. But the reason, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about wrestling and extreme music is because Mucho's new album is due out to Destiny. And there's a show coming up at the end of this week where you, ladies and gentlemen, will hear it. And the album is something of a concept album, and it is all about, you know, one of the greatest deathmatch wrestlers of all time, still is, Matt Tremont. And it's about him, and it's kind of almost a telling of a collection of matches with him and Tsuchiya Inata, and their kind of whole relationship and what happened. And I thought that got me in before I even listened to Burning Idol. That got me into that because I thought that was a fascinating approach. Why start there?
When the band started, we actually had a whole other sound in mind. I wanted this to be, pardon me, an alternative country band.
Okay.
I wanted to play country music. And when we all got in a room together, what came out was an embryonic version of what you hear on the album. And we just kind of went with it. We were like, okay, I guess this is a heavy band. And now I'm grateful that we went that way because we needed – I did another interview the other day where I said we needed the music to slice like barbed wire and burn like fire. And this was the way to do it. The reason we started with the feud we started with is you know, I mentioned doing music off and on, and I had been on probably my longest ever off period. I quit shortly before the pandemic, like just as the pandemic was starting. And after everything started lifting and people started booking shows again, I just chose not to be part of that. I was okay. I was good. Hanging out with my wife and my son, going to wrestling shows, not enduring the stress of running a band because it is stressful on any level.
Yeah.
And I started to hear that some people that I had had disagreements with, and I'm not going to go into detail on those things because they don't deserve the attention. But certain people that didn't like me very much had started to say how great it is that I'd been run out of town. That didn't happen. And I felt like it was my duty to stand up and say that didn't happen, but it would be very hard to prove that if I didn't bring a band with me to say so. Yeah. So I went to a wrestling show, Game Changer Wrestling, GCW, spoke to one of the greatest deathmatch wrestlers of all time, Nick Gage. As we're standing there, we're smoking a little bit of pot, and he asks me something to the effect of, you know, what do you do? I said, yeah, I was a musician, but I quit a couple years ago. I ain't worried about all that. And this convicted bank robber looks me in my face and says, believe in your fucking self and remember who you fucking are. The next day, on the way home from Memphis to Nashville, it's about a 3 or 4 hour drive, I messaged Jeff, who's now my drummer and had been the drummer for the last band I was in. And I said, do you want to start something? I said, I'm going to need a few months to acquire the equipment and get in the right headspace, but I'm ready to work. And he said, brother, I'm on call whenever you need. I said, great. Awesome. Went to a show. Spoke to my guitarist, who I had also worked with a little bit in the past. And I said, I know you're going to say no, but I have this idea. And they, Adam, looked at me and said, I'm probably not going to say no. So we fast forward a few months past that. We get to Mud Show's first practice. And the writing process starts. And as I start writing lyrics, I realize that I've got a lot that I want to say about the past situations with the people, about my time away, about why I'm back. And it all felt like it ran parallel with the Tremont and Onita feud, and the way that Tremont came in young, a young man, hungry, passionate, calls out Onita. They have their match. It was what it was in 2017. There were good things about it and not good things about it. Tremont carries on with his life for the next few years, retires, which is where I was at, and then is called back by Onita for another fight. And I felt exactly like what I would imagine Tremont would have felt like, storyline-wise, being called back to something I'd happily walked away from. So from there, in the lyric writing process, it almost started as an accident. I also started dropping in little lyrical references to A Season in Hell by Arthur Rimbaud, which is he was a symbolist poet from the 1800s, and there's still a lot of dispute about what he meant, what he was saying in these poems. But a pretty good boiling down of it would be, he put himself through hell to write. And I very much wanted to do that with this album. I wanted to dive in, and all those bitter feelings I'd been sitting on for years, I let them out. And if there's any part of this album where that shows, it's the vocals, because I just shredded my voice in that studio. I had so much in there that needed to burst out, and I'm glad it did, because I feel I'm a happier person since being in the studio 5 or 6 months ago making this album.
That's pretty big things to say there, Mike. You know, that's pretty honest fucking shit. right there. Let's be, you know, that's as pretty as honest as it gets. You know, you have a situation that you walk away with for your betterment of your family. That, you know, there's a lot of people out there that maybe talk a lot of shit, and then you go, okay, look, you know, I'm coming back with the honest interpretation of what I want to sound like and what I want to do. You take the things around you, the symbolism of poetry of 18th century poets, and the things you've seen in real life, face to face, talking to Nick, and getting that from it, and then seeing those parallels. You know, that's heavy. That's heavy more than just sound concepts, sir. And you know, I didn't know any of this going into listening to it, and it was heavy to me then. Even listening to it now, it has a whole extra weight to that, like, which is incredible, sir. Did it feel cathartic at the time?
It did. Yeah. As I was writing it, I knew that this was the only time I would ever need to publicly address any of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, I haven't gone into much detail about those situations, like I said, and I won't, but on the album is everything I have to say. Yeah. And I guess the main point of the whole album is it's not, things don't have to be over unless you decide they're over. And yeah, you can only be stopped if you allow yourself to be stopped.
Yeah.
I'm ashamed to this day that I sat around for almost 3 years and allowed myself to be stopped because I didn't think I had anything left to offer. And here we are talking about an album that I think might actually, I hope anyway, helps at least one person who feels like it's too late or, you know, something like that to realize that it ain't.
It comes up a lot with extreme music that in order to sometimes produce some of these things and these vocalizations and these sounds is that the person has to go through that process, has to be you know, an exorcism of this feeling of the, it has to be, you can't fake this type of thing. It's not something you can just, you know, call in. It's not something you can pretend to do, you know. When I hear Corey on the first Slipknot record, you know, blowing his voice on that type of thing and stuff like that, I know he meant it. I know it kind of, it was deeply personal to him, you know, and I think that that's one of the things that we look for in extreme music and look for in that type of thing is honesty, which is, you know, truly when you kind of look very, very deep within yourself and bring that out. You know, I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, I think all the best stuff comes from an honest place like that. Mm-hmm. Even if the lyrics are not necessarily decipherable, or if they are decipherable, even if they don't make a lot of sense to the listener, if the singer means it, then you've got yourself the primary foundation for a really good fucking song, especially in heavy music.
I think when he was writing A Season in Hell, I don't think he was thinking about necessarily the whole thing. I think he was just getting that out in the same way that you are. I think he was just like, look, this is, you know, I need to say these things. I need to put this out there.
Yeah, I mean, Rimbaud himself, his entire career was like two books. He wrote poems until he was 20 or 21 and then spent the entire second half of his life, as far as anyone knows, not writing a word. He said what he had to say, and he got the fuck out. And there is something very, very admirable about that.
Yeah, did he? He didn't stick around longer than he needed to. He got done what he put out there, what he wanted to be done, and anybody can interpret that and reinterpret that and stuff. And I think that is, I think that's an incredible sort of powerful thing to do. You know, to go, look, this is this, like it, what don't like it, and I'm out, and on to the next thing. So
a spiritual mic drop.
Yeah. Best way of saying it. And so for me, getting into like wrestling was much like yourself, maybe a little bit earlier. At first, I started with WWE, and then I would see things in the WWE and I would be like, where's that guy from? And where's that happened? So in the same way that I listen to heavy bands, I kind of offshooted for more heavier bands. I looked for more intense stuff with wrestling. And I kind of got into the death match and that type of thing around the time, sort of in the very, very early days of ECW, and around the sort of the time when you could get tapes of the King of the Deathmatch tournaments. And that my first sort of things were watching a Terry Funk with the No Rope Exploding Deathmatches and C4 and Anita's and the stuff that they did together. That was my first kind of scene of that. And I was like, this is fucking insane. I didn't know what I was seeing, but I knew it was fucking cool. And every so often that will bleed, pun intended, into WWE. You'd get someone who'd use fire, or someone who'd use barbed wire, only a very small amount. They wouldn't go crazy. And it'd be a little bit of that. And then it kind of, obviously, the Attitude Era got much worse. But then when I was bored with some of the stuff that I'd seen after ECW kind of melted with WWE, I turned to CZW.
Love CZW. And,
yeah, and so that's where I kind of really picked up, you know, Tournament of Death, Cage of Death, and that type of thing. And it's mad that, like, you know, Matt's only, what, he's like 32, 33, something like that.
He might have just turned 35, something like that. He's young, barely
like
older
60
than me.
Something, right? And
Onita was, we drove the 16 or 18 hours from Memphis, Tennessee to Trenton, New Jersey, my wife, myself, and my son, to see Onita versus Tremont in 2021. And I think at the time I looked it up, and Onita was like 65 years old.
And it's one of those, one of the great things about deathmatch wrestling is every fucker's equal. So if you're really big, fine. If you're really thin, fine. If you were, you know, if you're tall, short, whatever it may be, it doesn't really matter. It matters about your pain threshold. You know, it matters about kind of what you're prepared to do to yourself and what you're prepared to do to someone else in that ring. That's why, you know, someone like Necro Butcher's like got a really long career, because, you know, the guy's fucking insane. And, you know, you look at Anita, and it's like
the sickest punches I have ever seen.
You look at like Anita, and he's kind of still a badass. He's like, where's the leather jacket and shit, and comes out with the barbed wire bats and stuff, and he still
keeps that barbed wire bat on his person for sure.
Yeah, and you just think to yourself, that's fucking cool. That's cool. That guy's just fucking, he's just got this ridiculously high pain threshold and just doesn't give a fuck. And I think there's something fucking amazing about watching that. And there is an art form, I think you'll maybe agree, to great deathmatch wrestling. In the same way there's an art form to great death metal, there's an art form to the two. The two share a lot of similarities.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so, you know, I wonder why that is. Like, we talk about metal and horror being bedfellows, but the metal and wrestling's got a history that goes way, way back. You know, it's like, and every time I used to see CCW, I used to get, at the time, tapes, and then it moved to DVDs sent to me. When I would see them, I would be like, all the music's metal. All the music's heavy shit. And I was like, this is winning. I like that, and I like the music, you know?
Yeah, there's a link, and I can't explain it, but I don't know. I think the link, if it can be explained at all, it could be described as a camaraderie based on taking violence and aggression and turning it into something productive and beautiful at times. It's art. We've called it art a couple of times here now. That's exactly what it is.
The artwork,
tells you it doesn't take talent to turn a fluorescent light tube into a beautiful piece of disgusting art, doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's just another form of storytelling as well. You know, you can weave these things together. You know, I think of, like, you know, some of the Tournaments of Death I've seen. You know, I think of Tournaments of Death, I think that was probably Matt's debut. I think it might have been one of his debuts. I think he was against Masada. And you think of the storytelling that goes on there, where someone hitting someone else with a light tube or putting them through a pane of glass or whatever has an initial thing, initial wow, that's the thing I'm seeing. But if you can tell a story as to what led up to that and why that means a thing, that's a real skill, right? That's not easy to do. Anybody could hurt someone else or throw them off through a table, but if there's a whole story there that means something, that's next level stuff, right?
Absolutely. I understand to an extent the criticism against deathmatch wrestling. My favorite point I've ever heard made against it was Jim Cornette on one of his stupid podcasts says, "I worry for the mental health of someone that is entertained by the idea of watching motherfuckers maim each other." And I say, yeah, I get that, but, light tube go, pfft. So fuck you,
I hear what he's saying. Yeah,
but also from the logical side of it, if you've really got such a heated anger and hatred for your opponent, and you really want to make this believable, I've been waiting to get my hands on you, motherfucker, are you going to grab them and throw them in a wrist lock, or are you going to pick up a chair and beat their fucking shit in?
Yeah.
I'm going for the chair in a real fight every time.
It's that age-old battle. Every match is the same. Every match is the same. It's a battle between light and dark, between good and evil, whatever level you want to put that is. There's got to be a guy that is so bad, he deserves to get taught a lesson. There's got to be a good guy that wants to teach him that lesson. There's got to be a balance. It's not just two guys getting into a ring and doing that, like boxing. There's a story. There's a story where it's like, there's a reason it's led up to this. And the build can sometimes be, you think about like the matches that we're talking about for this album. There's a story there. There's a whole running story arc, that goes through that. It makes every single match mean something. And the stakes get higher as they go over. What's the difference between a guy who's a stuntman who's safely setting himself on fire for a big part in a story that happens where someone gets set on fire? But isn't that the same thing? Yes, these guys doing this and these girls doing this get scars and get things like that. But I'm sure every stuntman's got a whole boatload of scars as well. It's storytelling. It's storytelling. And I think you may have hit on why death metal and extreme music has good bedfellows with wrestling and deathmatch wrestling, because we're the underdogs. Both sides are the underdogs. Oh, deathmatch wrestling is garbage wrestling. The death metal music is lowest form of technical accomplishment. It doesn't mean anything. It's musically inept. We go, okay, maybe we are. Maybe we are the isolated and the underdog and the underground, and we're never going to win a Grammy type of situation, and you're never going to win a match of the year in wrestling. But we kind of enjoy that because it means that there's not that many steps between me and them. And I like that because then I can picture myself in the same way, and it's empowering.
Exactly. And even if we never win a Grammy, and even if any of our deathmatch wrestlers never have Dave Meltzer rate their shit 5 stars, I can guarantee you, you're going to have more fun at a Mud Show gig than a Slayer gig, and you're going to have more fun at a GCW show than a WWE or AEW show.
Yeah. There's a way bigger strength of camaraderie, isn't it? You said that before about camaraderie. At a death metal show and an extreme metal show, yes, there's a pit that looks to the outside like it's really, really aggressive and there's shit going on, but everybody's looking out for each other and it's okay and no one's being a dick and everybody's kind of respectful of what's going on in a contained environment. And in the same way, at a death match, they can spill out into the crowd and everybody knows relatively it's safe, bar weird accidents, it's relatively safe. The wrestlers are trying to take care of each other. Surprisingly, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not into deathmatch wrestling, they're not actually trying to kill each other. They're trying to tell a story.
The difference between a big corporate wrestling event and a deathmatch event. Yeah. Last year, within a couple of months of each other, We, my family, you know, me, my wife, my son went to an AEW show and a show for ICW No Holds Bar deathmatch promotion.
Mm-hmm.
The ICW show was in Chicago, and the people in Chicago in general, I don't know if we just kept running into rude people. We had never been there before, but it was like everybody in Chicago seems very, very blunt. They all seem to be in a big rush, like a little miniature New York, you know? But during one of the death matches, the end piece of the light tube flew off and hit my son right in the forehead.
Oh, shit.
And he was fine, didn't break the skin, didn't draw blood, but it scared him, and he got upset for a moment, and all of these deathmatch fans crowded around my kid to make sure that he was okay.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a few months earlier at an AEW show, the only interaction with any of the other fans was having to listen to the guy behind us make transphobic comments about one of the wrestlers. And that's the difference to me.
Yeah.
That nobody willing to tell this drunk asshole to shut the fuck up. It was awful.
I remember the first time I ever saw someone ejected from a show ever. Was it a wrestling show? Was it at an extreme wrestling show in my local area where someone was saying all kinds of shit, and it's like, look, you know, you can call someone an asshole and you can say that, but don't say this stuff, like, you know, and get out, and the entire crowd get this guy out. And I was like, wow, you know what I mean? We're all on the same page here. We're all good people trying to just have a good time here. We've got no time for that. Like,
the wrestling.
Yeah. But that's it. You know, wrestling's always been, it's always been on the outside to some people, even when it's like WWE, millions of people watching it type of shit. It's always been on the outside, hasn't it? It's never been fully accepted, even though millions upon millions of people watch it. But, you know, that's the same for extreme music. And I don't know if I want it to be. I don't know if I want, you know, a death match necessarily in a big arena, in a big stadium. No. I don't know if I want that. I don't want to see an extreme band necessarily in a massive arena because I think it will dilute what's going on.
Yeah, and there are places for that. Like I said, you can go see Slayer or Slipknot in a big arena or see Metallica in a big stadium even, but you are not going to get the same experience that you would get at a small club show or in a dive bar watching a band of teenage and college-aged kids play for their friends.
Yeah.
There's something special about it that you can't explain to someone who hasn't experienced it or has experienced it and didn't connect with it the way we did.
A lot of bands are always trying to chase that as well, that experience of, like, you know, like, very famously, ladies and gentlemen, CZW and ECW crowds are very vocal, very in your face, and they're on from the first bell to the end. They're really, really involved, and if they love you, they love you, and if they hate you, they really hate you. But if they love you, they'll applaud great wrestling, and they'll applaud good storytelling, they'll applaud that, and they'll be very involved in it. And a lot of the larger promotions, like AEW and WWE, chase that, and every so often, you'll see a deathmatch wrestler appear to some degree on those shows. And it's them, I think, trying to get that credibility and trying to get that. In the same way that when someone wants to show a bad guy in a movie, they'll generally have metal playing because it gives them that bad guy credibility vibe, you know. It's that cool factor that you can't really get as something becomes more popular and bigger. So, I suppose that, you know, I was most amazed to see that you're going to be putting on a show then for this album launch. And it's a wrestling show?
It's a wrestling show, a no-ring deathmatch show. The first match, there's three matches, three bands, a rapper, and a comedian. The show opens with a death match. I was just told earlier today that one of the wrestlers won't be able to make it. Don't know who his replacement's going to be. I guess we're going to have to see. But there will be an opening match sponsored by a local promotion called Resurrection Pro Wrestling. And then the first musical act of the night is Morrison Jones, the rapper that features at the end of Burning Idol from our album. Then we have a doom band coming over from Little Rock, Arkansas, called Mammoth Caravan. And they write huge sounding heavy metal. They are so, so good. And most of their music seems to be about like mammoths and shit, like prehistoric.
Dinosaurs.
I love it. That's my whole vibe. That's bringing it right back to the dinosaurs. And had to have the dinosaur representation on this gig. And then we have a wrestler coming over from Little Rock, Sleazy E, who is going to take on Madman Pondo.
I saw that Madman Pondo. I was like, shit.
Madman Pondo.
It's a real
and then
legend.
We have and it turns out one of the easiest dudes in the world to work with. It has not said no to a single idea I've had yet. So Sleazy versus Pondo, and then we have Seize and Desist. Seize and Desist, excuse me. And they are a hardcore punk band, and two-thirds of Seize and Desist used to be two-thirds of the legendary Negro Terror. So bona fide hardcore punk legends in the American South will be performing. And then we have legendary touring comic Mo Alexander. And then Mud Show's going to play Destiny front to back. And then in our main event, we have a Memphis street fight that is going to get so gnarly that we've been told it has to take place outside the venue in the back alley between AJ Gray and Matt Tremont.
Amazing. Amazing that you, let's just walk this back a sec, Mike. You have this period in your life where you're like, fuck the game, fuck this. I am moving away from this shit. This is nothing to do. I want to move away. And you have this epiphany where you're like, you know what? I've got something to say. I want to be heard. I've got some shit to put out there. You put it out there after talking to Nick and getting this wonderful, you know, pep talk from him. You go out there, you go, okay, what in my life am I drawing from? I'm drawing from this unique feud that they have. And then you go, okay, you produce this album, you know, against almost the music that you thought you were going to produce. You just let your heart open. You produce this music. You then book a wrestling show. You know, you book these people. And let's be honest, Madman Pondo is an absolute legend, ladies and gentlemen, in the sports of deathmatch wrestling. And then the main event...
It cannot be overstated, his influence
it
on the entire
genre. It cannot be overstated. You know, if, ladies and gentlemen, just before I get to where it was going, but if you are unsure about some of this, go and watch some... Put these people's names in on YouTube and watch some of these matches. Watch some of the FMW matches and this type of thing and see some of the history of what's going on here. And try and take an objective look at it and see what's going on. I think you'll be surprised. But then you get to and in the main events, before your band plays this album entirely, which is about their matches and that rivalry, and then he wrestles that event. It's dreamlike, Mike.
Yeah.
It's absolutely dreamlike.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what people keep telling me. I don't think it's fully hit me yet, the gravity of it. I don't think it will until I'm at the venue and I see that everyone's arrived and the show is going to go off, presumably without a hitch. But everything has been beyond what I could have expected setting this. It's been a stressful experience. This was not the original main event for the show. But especially as far as Tremont and Pondo go, I could not have asked for more solid dudes. Both of them have been incredibly professional. Tremont especially has been far more outgoing than... I was nervous to send him the original Facebook message asking for his blessing to even make the album about him.
Wow. So you actually sent an email before you began this, go, you know, look, I'm gonna do this. And what you want, you actually sent an email to him?
Yes, I was like, I was like, I've started writing this album. It's going well. Before I finish it for no reason, I wanted to get your blessing first.
Wow.
To tell your stories my way. And he responded to that the same way he's responded to everything I've asked of him for the last year almost. Sounds good. No problem, man. Everything's
do you
great.
Think he might,
good.
I suppose the crowning glory will be, is he going to come out to one of your songs?
I would imagine he's still going to come out.
That's the end, then, Mike. That's the goal, right? That's the end.
If not Tremont, then there has to be some wrestler walk out to a Mud Show song before we're done, or what the fuck was all this for?
But it's just, honestly, I mean, it's such a, you know, how often does someone dedicate an album and write an album about that person or that thing, and that person fucking is alive, and moreover, can actually hear you play that live? That's fucking, you know, I can't overstate how amazing that is. That does not happen every day, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it all came from adversity. It all came from some motherfucker talking shit. And, you know, you deciding you weren't having of it and you were going to control your life rather than let someone else do it. You know, that's a powerful message, my friends, a powerful message indeed.
Thank you. I hope it resonates with somebody out there.
I don't want to spoil the events because I don't know. Do you have a spot in this event?
What do you mean?
So in the main event, yeah, is there a spot that involves you?
Oh, no. I walk with a cane from a car accident.
I'm just wondering if it's a slap to the face maybe you can do, or, you know, it's...
I'll do whatever's asked of me. No, I'll take a bump. I'll just, you know, need help up.
We'll figure something out with the cane. That could be doable. You know,
I've had wrestlers at shows just take my cane and use it as a weapon and hand it back to me. So
can do that.
Fuck it. Yeah, something like that. I'll just wrap it in barbed wire. It'll be great.
What's going to be interesting is seeing this play out. So, I mean, how would because most of the listeners maybe were listening in other countries. Is this being streamed in any way? Is it being filmed in any way?
We are going to film the matches, and they will eventually be posted somehow. Not sure yet. I have an idea, but I don't want to say.
Sure.
But we will get them up somehow, and they'll be available to see, because we've had people from your side of the pond send me a message and go, man, I wish I could make it to that show.
Yeah.
I wish there was a way I could see that show. So we hired a photography team. We're going to get the matches filmed. Probably not the musical sets, but that's fine. and they will be available at some point.
Because that's, you know, like I've said, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, you're now part of Matt's story. Isn't that interesting? You're now part of that.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah, that's
pretty sick. That's pretty good. A lot of people, when I put pictures of famous people I've met and stood next to and all that shit, a lot of people are like, how did you do that? And I was like, it's the easiest way in the world. It's hard fucking work. You know, you've met this guy and are able to do these shows now because of the hard work that you put in. You know what I mean? You wrote an album, you put up a show. It's hard enough making a metal show happen. I've seen a wrestling show put together, and I know just how fucking hard that is as well. You know, that's like, yeah, that's so many moving parts. Are you thinking about doing, is this a one-off, or do you think you might do another wrestling show? Ladies and gentlemen, fingers to lips. You know, we know what that means. But I think I think a lot of people are. I'm going to put links in the socials as always. A lot of people need to hear this record. I think this is an important record, not only for you, sir, but I think it's a very, very interesting record. I think there's a lot going on there that needs to be kind of looked at and appreciated. If I was even close to being in that area, I would be at this show front and center. I would take that bump easily. It's been wonderful to talk to you, Mike. I guess what we need to do is we need to schedule one for after the show to see what happened and how it went and what your thoughts were and when you've kind of come down to kind of go through it, because I think everybody's going to want to know how did it go, you know?
I'd love to do that.
I think it'd be fun.
It'd be great. Yeah, no, I didn't know what to expect. I haven't really sat and spoken out loud about Mud Show at length like this with anyone yet. And you've been super easy to talk to and actually engage with the material. So I certainly appreciate that. I did an interview the other day where all of the questions were based on all the questions heavily quoted our PR company's release about us. And it's very, yeah. It was very obvious that it was a Mad Lib fill in the blank sort of situation with us, and that they didn't give a shit. So,
it's like the
opposite of that.
Yeah. I don't have any fucking, there's no fucking notes. There's no questions to pre-prepare because what I heard in that record and what I got from talking to you and seeing the stuff that you're putting out socially was something that I think would be really, really, really disrespectful if I didn't come into this knowing what the fuck I was. So I wouldn't have talked about wrestling if I wasn't a fan doing this. I wouldn't have, but it was, I'm a huge fan, and it resonated with me, and I'm a huge fan of extreme music, and that resonated with me. So it meant that this isn't a fucking chore for me. This isn't like, 2 o'clock conversation with Mike, 2:30 conversation with someone else. This is me and you talking about clearly what you love and clearly what I love, which is entirely what the show is about. I'm really grateful for your time, and I'm really happy that you got past what you had to get past. And it seems like you're in this fucking amazing place where I suppose the final sort of thing to maybe look at is what's going to be next? Are you looking to tour then with this, with the album? What's your plans?
We have our eyes set on a model that's not so much touring.
Okay.
Mostly because of how hard it would be on my spine.
Hmm.
So instead of going on tours, we figure it would be more efficient in a lot of ways to play bigger deathmatch shows so that's what's next, is trying to get on trying to play deathmatch tournaments and have space for a band, things like that, as we work on album number 2, which I'm hoping to have out. Don't quote me on this, but maybe late next year.
Is the plan for just a set number of albums as well with this? Is that right?
I'm thinking 4 albums. Okay. I've got 4 stories in mind.
Are you seeing it like it's a story arc? Like there will be an arc leading through all 4 albums that'll be resolved with the 4th?
No, it'll probably just be 4 different stories.
Right.
As sort of an anthology where there are little links between them.
Sure.
The small threads to tie them together.
Will all those threads be wrestling related and deathmatch wrestling related?
Yes, all 4 albums will tell deathmatch stories.
Okay, so it's maybe feuds as well and specific point in times?
Yes, specific guys with specific points of their careers and things they've gone through. Like I said, I know who I want them all to be about. They are all still alive as of right now.
Okay.
Let's not consider what would happen if they weren't. I'd be very upset. We have I have all the stories in mind, and I it's not impossible for me to ask all of them permission to do it, because I would never do it without.
Right.
Four albums feels right. I'm looking to, I'm 32 now. I'm looking to maybe retire again at 40.
Mike, on your terms this time though, really. You know, you'll have had your album, it'll be on your terms, sir, won't it?
Exactly.
It'll be your choice, no one else's.
Yeah, that's the part of it that makes me okay with it, because I've never pictured myself as an old man doing this, and that's no disrespect to anybody that does this their entire life. Ozzy Osbourne is God to me, you know. Yeah. But I don't want that for myself. I'd like a period of time, at least for a long while, where I can just do what I was doing before Mud Show for those 2 or 3 years and just spend time with my family.
Hmm.
But before then, there is a lot of bloodshed, a lot of noise to make, and I'm looking forward to that just as much as the family time later.
I love it. What better way to end our little conversation, Mike? It's been a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Roach from Mud Show. Thank you for coming on the show, sir. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me. This was so great. Thank you so much.
Roach there from Mud Show. Their new album Destiny is available now through all streaming services, and you should definitely go and buy that album as well. He has the show this weekend, which just looks, as we went through in there, just absolutely fucking ridiculously good. Deathmatch wrestling and death metal and stuff. What a beautiful combination. And I always find that's very interesting to me to hear the kind of when metal has those sort of adjacencies like horror, and in this case, extreme deathmatch wrestling. And how wonderfully honest was Mike there, you know, talking about his challenges and how he got to the place where he has got to. And I thought it was a wonderful journey. We shall watch with interest what happens with Mud Show, because they just look like they're going to be great, you know. And he's got a really good attitude, and you know, what a journey that we're going to be on to see this kind of, you know, trilogy of albums all based around this one subject, or this around these kind of subjects. And then he's out and he's done. Like Tarantino, only doing like 10 movies. Mike's going to be done and that's it. And we'll be left with this wonderful legacy. So I honestly, if you are in that area and in the Memphis area and what have you, you probably already know about this wrestling show if you're a fan, because it's such a big, he said it's got several big signings on it. But if you don't, you should absolutely go. But for those people like myself not able to go to the show, the album is an absolute must listen. It's fantastic. I'd be interested to hear your feedback, what you like about the album and how you thought about it. I think Mud Show going to be a very interesting prospect to kind of see how this goes with them. Fantastic stuff. And Mike, like I said, I'll probably get him on again, because it's just hugely interesting to me, and a wonderful outlook and a wonderful, you know, story I thought he told. And that's the thing I like to do, ladies and gentlemen, is, you know, sometimes it's nice to talk about someone's journey that, you know, sometimes doesn't start in a good place and ends up in a great place, because that's really how life is, isn't it? That, you know, you have these moments where you're down and things are very difficult. So it's difficult to see the end of that, and it can be quite depressing as well. But once you know that there is, and life is those peaks and troughs, it becomes more manageable when these things happen. And so it's nice to express those journeys to say that, you know, you're not alone out there, ladies and gentlemen, when you're struggling with the things that you're struggling with. There are other people with other stories, and they're going through similar difficulties, and there can be an incredible power that could be derived from that. And, you know, it can help you when you need that support, you know, even if you've never met that person. You know, I've never met Mike in real life, but got an enormous amount of energy from him. But I went away and I was like, shit, I've got to get some stuff done. You know, I really want to do stuff. And that's really all I've ever wanted to achieve with this podcast, is to help you feel better about what you're doing, get you through a difficult time by you laughing at it, or you're nodding your head, or you get some kind of empowerment from what someone says in it, and talk to people on their journey. And the audience I understand is the metal audience. The people I understand are from that metal world, so it makes sense that I always have those people. I've got some great shows coming up, really have. I'm really looking forward to ones I've done, I'm just editing now, and ones I'm coming up to, I've already booked in. Some great shows coming up, and some great shows, live shows as well, which I'll get into on the social media. So as always, thanks for listening, and I'll see you at the show.